In the Spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines, only on SAFM.
So Wasim Karim is in the spotlight. He's the CEO of the NYDA, which quite honestly, I would think is one of the most significant organizations in the country, the National Youth Development Agency. Well, I'm sure he's going to agree with me because he just got into that job. Wasim, good chatting to you. Thanks for allowing me to put you in the spotlight.
Sure. Good afternoon, Ashraf, and good afternoon to your listeners as well.
And you're telling me like what you got the job a few days ago and you got like 4 days leave. Something along those lines, like a long weekend.
I think they wanted me to work over the long weekend. So they made the offer just before the long weekend.
Okay. And did you work over the long weekend?
Just a little bit.
Well, there you are. Let's talk about the NYDA. I'm suggesting, as you've heard me say, it has to be one of the most significant organizations in the country. So A, do you concur? And if so, why do you think that is the case?
Yeah, so of course I must agree that it is one of the most significant organizations. Firstly, it's the only government institution solely focused on youth development in South Africa. And following on from that is that South Africa has a very large youth population. So the majority of our people, almost 20 million, fall between the ages of 14 and 35 years old, which means South Africa has a demographic dividend of young people, you know, who are poised to enter the working world. But following on from that is that we suffer a huge youth unemployment crisis in this country. Almost 60% of young people unemployed. Statistics such as young people are 17% more likely to be perpetrators of crime or violence or be victims of crime or violence. 59% of young people don't have matric. So the statistics really paint a dire picture of young people in South Africa, and focus is that we're not aimed to reach the goals that the National Development Plan set out or to capitalize on that demographic dividend of young people.
So what does the NYDA do? Why do you exist?
Yeah, so I think, you know, South Africa's policy or government policy has largely focused on education as a focus for young people in this country. But the NYDA forms sort of a hybrid between the levels of basic education and higher education in South Africa. So we look at young people beyond them just going to university or going to school and getting a job. So we, for example, look at things like youth entrepreneurship. So again, South Africa has low levels of youth entrepreneurship, young people entering the business world. So we have entire programs focused on giving young people opportunities to become entrepreneurs, looking at them becoming more than just job takers, but job creators of the future as well.
So with that in mind, you know, with regards to issues like fees must fall and decolonization of education, and I know you're new in the job, but you were the CFO before, you were handling the monies.
Yeah.
Should the NYDA not have played a greater role than it has, looking at those important issues, fees must fall, decolonization, unemployment, and being very much at the center of all those type of debates?
Yeah, of course. We should. I agree with you there. I don't think it's necessarily that we haven't been. I think on many issues, we've adopted the government line on many issues that arise. So, for example, fees must fall. We introduced a scholarship program because if you look at our board of directors, they're drawn from constituencies themselves. So they're representatives of young people in South Africa. Back in 2014, we were already seeing issues such as NYDA, or well, young people believe that higher education is not responsive to what they need. Because although NSFAS was giving you a bursary, you go to university, your books are not necessarily taken care of, you don't have access to meals. So it means you go to bed hungry, you can't make the maximum opportunity, which is why we then introduced a pilot of scholarships, right? Now, government has always said to us that NYDA should aim to pilot and then mainstream youth development. Mm-hmm. So our intake was very small. We were looking at 500 students who had across-the-board coverage of higher education. So we were doing this even before the Fees Must Fall protests. We should have made a bigger noise about it.
I was going to tell you, why don't you guys market
Agreed.
That?
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that I'd really like to see during my tenure improve, you know. I've said to the board that as the only youth development institution, we need to be the thought leader on youth development matters in South Africa. So, for example, I say to you, young people are not completing matric. We have one of the highest dropouts. Why is that, right? When the NYDA releases reports and does monitoring and evaluation and impact studies, these are the questions we need to be able to answer. We need to be advocates for young people.
Why do you think that is the case? Because, I mean, you're quite right. We look at matric numbers and whether the percentages are up a couple of points or below. The real big issue is if 100 people starts grade one, then at the moment, what, about 50% don't even finish it, right? And that's a massively serious problem. Why do you think that's the problem?
Yeah, so in my own view, and I'm not backed up by any empirical evidence here, but in my own view, I would say if you look at early childhood development, it forms such a critical component of any person's life. Many of your cognitive functions are developed in early childhood development, you know. And between the ages of 0 and 2, many young people still bear the brunt of poverty and inequality. They're not getting the necessary nutrition. They're not getting the necessary development of their skills, which means that a six-year-old in the suburbs of Johannesburg and the six-year-old in rural Limpopo are massive steps behind one another when they enter school level.
So that means by virtue of where they're born and their family, there's this inherent disadvantage already, or an advantage.
Indeed, you know, and doesn't necessarily always help, although we appreciate it. I mean, it doesn't necessarily help to give you both an iPad, you know. It's not necessarily going to change where you come from. Secondly, and this is where we need stronger advocacy from citizens in our country, is that the social structures need to be more configured towards producing better citizens. So where children are growing up in child-headed households with single parents, victims of domestic abuse, you're already setting them back before their life even starts, you know. And those are some of the issues. With regards to the basic education system, we also need to look at issues that plague the sector, you know, teachers that are not at school on time, or that are not putting the necessary efforts into their work, you know. So I think all of those factors are critical in the development.
There's certainly lots to do that. So 0891-104207, friends, family, colleagues, people certainly from the NYDA, others as well, all who knows Wasim Karim. You may want to call in and say hello to him. Who's listening from your... Have you given the family the opportunity that they need to tune in to
them? I did tell them.
Well, I expect you then to call in, because really we're celebrating one of your very own, so why would you not do that? 0891-104207, hashtag Afternoon Talk when you do tweet, and you can tweet to me, Ashraf Garda, and certainly tweet to SAFM Radio as well, right? Looking forward to your conversations on air by social media and certainly by calling in. Let's then, I just want to stay with the NYDA for a moment. In terms of your position, then would the NYDA simply be an executor of the National Development Plan? Is there scope to argue between the two agencies? Because, I mean, that argument would be a very important vibrant debate that should take place.
So I'm assuming you're asking the competing interests of the National Development Plan versus the National.
Well, I'm suggesting if there's no competing interest, it could be problematic because you just sort of rubber stamp what has been agreed elsewhere.
Yeah, no, of course. Look, purely as a public entity, we're not a policy setter, but we make inputs to policy. And one of the roles that we see for ourselves is to not only make inputs to youth development policy, but to across the government policy that it considers young people. So, for example, if there's a mining charter that's passed, we should represent the interests of young people when that mining charter is passed to ensure that they are adequately represented, you know. Where we see challenges as well, it's necessary for us to raise them, you know. And one of the key elements that our new board has taken, you know, they've been in office for about 10 months, they've said that they want to be more vocal about youth issues, you know, that they want to bring to the forefront even where government is failing young people. You know, even though we form part of the system.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I would think should be happening. Why did they give you the job? you must have asked them. And you're an accountant. You want facts and figures. Like, why did I get the job?
Yeah. So look, I'll say this. You know, I never wanted to be an accountant, you know. I always had a passion for something beyond just facts and figures, although I do enjoy numbers from time to time, you know. I think I joined the NYDA at a young age. So I used to, if I give you a bit of history, I used to work for KPMG.
I thought I won't bring it up. But, you know, accountants by nature want to deal with facts and figures and they put it forward. Yeah.
Yeah, so
but a few years ago, right?
Yeah, a few years ago. And I used to be on the audit of the NYDA. Yeah. And if you know the history of NYDA, it had very serious initial governance challenges. You know, you refer to things that happened in the past, irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So when the CFO post became available, the CEO at the time, Katsura Mukumba, asked me to apply for the post.
From KPMG?
From KPMG, okay. Yeah. And I was just 26 years old at the time. And many people were like, you're literally committing career suicide here. You will not see yourself in this profession beyond the age of 30 if you
do this. Why did you, in spite of that advice of committing career suicide, you're going into, you know, from a company in terms of now a government agency.
Yeah.
And you still went for it. Why?
Yeah. Look, my family has always been politically aligned. So my grandfather, my late grandfather was, you know, he served the ANC during the 1960s and the 1970s.
What's his name?
Abdul Razak Tayyob.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So we were always involved in politics. You know, we always understood the history of this country, you know, and the opportunity to serve your country is one that is very difficult to turn down. In addition, you know, I was in a point in my life where, you know, I didn't really see myself in the corporate sector, you know. You got to be a manager and then you got to be a senior manager and then you got to be a partner. And it just looked like such a long road from there, you know. So I was prepared to take a little bit of a risk, you know, jump a few years ahead in my career, you know. So against better advice, I went in there and, you know, and 4 years later, we've managed to at least clean up a lot of what historical baggage that the agency carried. So today, you speak about an agency that has zero irregular expenditure, that has
so versus, give us a comparison.
133 million when I took over.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and.
So, with 133 million rand of irregular expenditure 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Unaccounted for or unexplained properly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it was a difficult time, you know, and the commitment that the employees showed and that we were able to cohesively pull together as a unit. So three clean audits from the Auditor General, restructuring of the agency to reduce salary costs, relocation of the head office. We really helped to clean up the agency operationally, you know.
How much of input then came from yourself as the CFO?
Quite a bit.
To the CEO?
Yeah, quite a bit. So if you look at something like cleaning up irregular expenditure, you know, terminating contracts that were legacy loss-making contracts for the agency and onerous, restructuring, costing, how much it would cost us to retrench employees and move the organization forward, you know, moving to a smaller building and how much that would cost us. So we've really restructured the balance sheet and the budget of the agency to direct more funding towards youth development projects. But besides that, we've always adopted the principle that young people can't eat clean audits and good governance. It's an important principle. So in the last 3 years, we've also implemented strong legacy programs. So, for example, we provide grants to young people to start businesses. We've managed to fund over 2,500 businesses, creating more than 10,000 jobs. We've managed to place young people in job opportunities, over 20,000 young people placed in that. So we've been able to match it with youth development projects that we can account for as well.
So, after 4 years, so you've got the organization on a very good wicket then.
Yeah. So then the CEO wakes up one day and tells me he's planning to leave the organization and that he's been mentoring me to take over. And okay. And then the board took a decision to put me to act in the position while the recruitment process was undertaken. And then once the post was advertised, they encouraged me to apply as well. And one thing I always considered is that, am I not institutionalized in the agency? You know, is there sometimes not a need for fresh ideas and new innovative thinking, you know? And besides that, with my background being finance, you know, I would not have minded staying as a CFO in the agency.
Now you tell them.
Yeah. So, but the board was adamant that they felt that stability is important, okay. You know, and that transitional from one to another, and that sometimes bringing in a new person, you know, topples the apple cart as well, you know, so that they felt that they wanted the good work of the agency to continue, but for it to become great in the future.
Especially, of course, if there's instability, then you probably want a new person. But if there was stability and you were responsible for that, you probably want more of the same. Wasim Karim is my guest. He's the CEO of the NYDA. Apparently got a job before the long weekend, so he took the weekend off already, just rather ominously just telling you that. But he's an accountant, so I think he would know about just wastage. Clearly trying to get into that part of what inspired him to go that journey in a moment. 0891104207. You can call in if you have questions you want to put to him around the, you know, the role of the youth, specifically about maybe his own career, if you know much about him. If you're related to him, that's also welcome. But hashtag Afternoon Talk if you want to tweet, and SMS is 40938. Let's then go back to, like, in fact, maybe before we go back, we're going to play a song, because we asked you to choose a song, right? Whatever you've got, the song called Spirit, right?
Yeah.
Why that song?
Oh, yeah. So I told you about the old CEO leaving, and then we had a little bit of a farewell for him, just him and a close confidant. And then... it was late at night and the song was playing. So he told us whenever we get depressed about him leaving or whenever we feel a little bit down, we should listen to this song, yeah?
Okay.
It would be that little bit of motivation to keep fighting the fight, you know?
So you're depressed about him leaving now?
Yeah. No. Well, you know, I think when your mentor leaves, it's always difficult.
Okay.
But, you know, we move forward.
Well, this is for the former CEO then from the incumbent right now. So Spirit by Questa. Okay, there you guys got the Spirit, certainly the choice of Wasim Karim, the CEO of the NYDA, and that really in tribute to the former CEO, which is just a wonderful, it's Khatu Ramakumba, right? Let's then talk about your early days. I mean, you're from Pretoria.
Yeah,
Where you're born?
Yeah, born in Limpopo originally.
Okay, all right.
Tell me
about that early period of your life.
Yeah, so my family had a strong presence in Limpopo. My mother's parents came from there, you know. So my parents obviously had their careers and that kind of thing. I come from a family of doctors. So my father, his father, his brother, a lot of doctors in our family.
What happened to you?
Yeah. So I had a very shaky hand when I was a kid. So I probably would have killed more people than I would have saved. So probably better that I ended
up. Did you have any vision of becoming a doctor?
No.
So was it expected?
No, not really, to be honest with you. Hey, I wanted to be a journalist.
Okay.
For most part of my life, English was the only really subject that I genuinely enjoyed at school.
Really,
you know?
Okay.
So I always wanted to be a journalist. And then my dad used to tell me I'll end up writing for the local community paper.
Okay. You think he was right?
So yeah. You know, I wonder these days, you know. I think whatever profession you choose, you must aim to be the best you can be at that profession, you know. And if you do that, I think you can succeed at anything you
okay,
want.
Okay, so you didn't go, did you attempt the journalism route or
well,
that never happened?
I do write articles for the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, and I write for some of the newspapers from time to time. So I guess in a way I do.
And
get
maybe
to
some of the local
friend.
Papers so you can pay your father well.
And I get to do interviews with you, so okay, I would have liked to be on the other side, but it's okay.
We can give you a chance to do just that. And then the accounting, you know, career, what happened there?
Yeah,
so medicine was out, the journalism was out.
So you know how it goes if you're a young Indian child, you can be anything you want to be as long as it's a doctor, lawyer, or engineer.
Or an accountant or something along that line.
So it was that. But I think, you know, I think the one thing I've realized about this career that anything you want to be, you can be, you know. If it's such a broad-based career that if you want to be in training, if you want to be in a JSE-listed company, if you want to be in the government, you know, whatever you want to do, you can really do it in this career because it's so broad, you know. It offers you many options.
Because, I mean, you are a CA, right?
I am a chartered accountant.
So I mean, that gives you, gives you the tools to have an insight into just so many things.
Yeah, because I think it's more than anything, it's a business degree, you know. So you understand the perspectives of running a business, you know. So I think...
Why did you do that? And, you know, Was there a moment that you said, okay, that's what I'm going to do?
Not really, hey. I would say I was perennially confused until I joined the NYDA, you know. And some days I wake up and I'm still confused. You know?
But the choice then to study accounting?
No, look, it was more of, I really have no idea what I'm going to do. So it seems like a safe bet, you know. It'll pay the bills one day, you know. And then as my career progressed, I started to learn more about the public sector. I realized that not many accountants go there, you know, and I've always been the type of person to take the road less traveled, you know. So
that would buck the norm, because I mean, the norm would be, do accounting, hopefully become a CA, but before that, start your own accounting practice, maybe.
Or make get partner many clients, in a firm, you know? Or, you know, move into the private sector and, you know, chase a CFO position there. So that kind of thing. I was like, none of these really look really interesting.
What did your father say about that?
Well, everybody was like, really, are you sure about this? You know, what are you doing? This is not a good idea. You know, I remember my mother, distinct conversation. She said, not there, please, anywhere but there, you know. So it was a difficult decision. I was very alone when I made that decision, you know. But like I say, I enjoy a risk now and then.
Well, I'm glad that you've done that. Yeah. More to come, because I think, we need assets in our country. Of course, being the CEO now, what you're just 30.
Yeah, 30.
We'll try and make sense of all of that. Yeah. A 30-year-old of the NYDA, maybe to the men are born, because they are looking at youth issues, I would think. 3:30, let's get the news headlines.
Big stories and even bigger.
I would definitely concur, you know. But also the team spirit that they enjoy amongst themselves. You know, it's evident in the way they play the game, you know. And with this whole debacle of Australia and, you know, the spirit in which cricket is played, we can really say that our cricket team plays cricket in the right spirit, you know, that they're truly all gentlemen on the field. I think it's also not to give up, you know. My wife, incidentally, is also studied BCom accounting, and, you know, she never passed her honours, you know. But I think sometimes, you know, passing exams is not the be-all and end-all of your life, you know. There's a huge world out there.
Thanks for telling the nation. Now, we appreciate that. Lerato Gambu certainly thinks you've got a good choice of music, because he's making reference to that Cuesta song of spirit. So it's like, obviously enjoying it. So thumbs up to you. Glad that you're listening in, Lerato. Further thoughts, welcome as always. You can tweet me, hashtag Afternoon Talk, or maybe your wife should call in, 0891-104207. What was it like? I mean, in terms of corporate, let's get this right. It was KPMG and then NYDA.
Yeah.
What was KPMG like? And what was it like?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the level of professionalism is excellent at those kind of firms, you know. So you're doing your articles, so it's kind of like a graduate program that you're in, you know. But the level of exposure you get to huge clients, you know, Eskom was one of my clients, the Altron Group, I worked as an auditor there, NYDA, the CSIR. So it's really, you know, you're trusted with a lot at a young age, you know. And I think that builds the brand of chartered accountants in this country as well, because
that element of trust,
and you're challenged at a young age.
So I'm going to ask you this: what then do you say about KPMG specifically? But I mean, just so many other companies around the world in terms of, you know, trust being corroded because they're not delivering on the positions they've been entrusted to deliver on.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a huge element of greed, you know, in the world today. And it's unfortunate, because we've compromised integrity at the expense of profit, you know. And it's sad that it's come to that. You know, you used to look at the big four auditing firms as the beacon of trust, you know. If you put your signature next to something, that's how it is. And in the last 12 months, the auditing profession per se has experienced a massive downturn, you know. But beyond that, I mean, you know, we speak about...
And the
corruption.
Downturn what? In reputation, or the downturn in terms of demand? Demand has to be there.
No, demand is there, you know, because the law says you have to be audited. But what's the point if nobody trusts the reports that are coming out of there, you know? And I think we've made it too much about, you know, increase and more at the expense of quality, you know, which is sad. But I think it's also a chance for introspection and a chance to fix what's wrong, you know. I don't think it's at the point of collapse. I think we can definitely make changes to fix what's that. But it's also concepts such as, you know, we speak about corruption, right? But how is it that sometimes CEOs of companies award themselves hundreds of million rands in bonuses where lowest paid workers get 2,500 or 3,000 rand a month, you know?
So how is it? Give it to us. Because you guys would sign it off, right?
So, I mean, it's, for me, it's just legislated corruption then, right? All you're doing is capitalizing on the system, you know? And it's an extension of how capitalism has been allowed to get out of control.
So let me flip this around. What about the other argument? You can get 1,000 people earning 5,000 rands a month or 10,000 rands, but you need one person who can inspire massive wealth creation. I mean, that person can't be worth 10 times the 10,000 rands.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the scenario?
Agreed. And risk must follow, I mean, remuneration must follow risk, right? Obviously, your targets are much higher, your objectives are much higher, but are they 100 million times larger than anybody else, you know? And there's a social aspect to this as well, you know? Nobody's saying you shouldn't be rewarded, you know? And by the way, this is not just a South African issue, you know? In the UK, remuneration of directors is becoming a massive issue. Shareholder activism is becoming a massive issue, you know? So the question is, where's the moral integrity and the social activism part of it, you know, to make a positive contribution to us? We all understand that we can't pay everybody at a certain level, you know, and that there'll always be some gaps between it. But I think it needs to be managed in the way it goes forward. You know?
So where do you think this will all end up? I mean, if the President Ramaphosa came to you and said, just don't even talk about the NYDA, just give me your thoughts on and ensuring there's integrity in the auditing world.
Yeah.
What would you tell him to do? What?
So look, I think we need a process whereby we look at why these actions are being undertaken. You know, I think in recent history, the life is not so black and white anymore. You know, and I think people push the boundaries or push the lines. You know, but I would like us to go back and have an integrity framework that we adopt as South Africans, you know, which sets out what is the do's and don'ts. I mean, we know as chartered accountants, we're bound by a code of conduct, you know, but how many of us actually apply that code of conduct on a daily basis in all aspects of our life, you know? Every day or every week, you'll be faced with questionable judgments here or there, you know? And I think it needs to be cool and it needs to be the right thing to do to make the morally right decision in all aspects of your life.
Well, let's hope that happens.
Yeah.
There's a couple more tweets as we continue chatting to the spotlight guest, Wasim Karim, the newly appointed chief executive officer of the NYDA. He's been serving there for the last 4 years as the CFO, the chief financial officer, and understanding the reports. Reports are very operative. He's certainly got his numbers right there, and that's why he is where he is. Mario Nzamo saying, how many officers are there currently? Countrywide, how many are functional? Does he feel the youth of the South Africa has trust in the NYDA? If yes, how? If not, why? Okay, we'll get to that in just a second. But well, perhaps maybe answer that one.
Yeah. So currently we have 15 full service branches across the country. So you can get a full list on our website of the closest office to you. When the new board was appointed, the third board of directors, like I mentioned, they come from constituencies. And one of the criticisms that young people level against us is that NYDA is very far from young people. So if, for example, I live in Inkandla in KwaZulu-Natal, we only have an office in Ithekwini, Durban, So a young person must take a taxi 400 kilometers to travel to access a product or service. If you're applying for finance, you probably have to make two or three trips to get there, you know. So largely, these offices still reflect apartheid spatial planning, you know. So one of the things we undertook, and we know the fiscus is challenged, there's not that much new money available to open offices. So we've set it out as our vision to have, by the end of, 31 March 2020, to have an NYDA office in every district municipality. How we're going to do this without compromising on costs, because obviously those are operational costs, is these satellite offices have always been more information centers. So a young person could go there, but all you could get was information. You couldn't apply for a product or service. We want to put interns in there, so we also are contributing to placing young people in job opportunities, and we want to allow young people to access products and services. We also offer free Wi-Fi at all of these offices. We have a mobile application to keep up with technological developments so young people can have access to opportunities. And what we're finding more and more is that as we take these offices, because we have the know-how and the expertise on youth development, we find that provincial governments are more and more willing. So we say, okay, we bring an office here, we staff it, we train the staff, we put in bricks and mortar, we put in laptops there, help us to give products and services. So we found that the KwaZulu-Natal provincial government gave us 6 million rand in addition to what we put into our grant program. So that's another potential, you know, 100 grants that we can get.
Because I mean, it goes to that point about how you're measuring the impact of the NYDA.
Yeah, of course, you know.
And how would you measure it?
So there's two measures that I mainly look at, right? And I'm a finance person. So I look at how much it costs us to create each job that we create, right? So currently you look at on the grant program, we give a grant of 60, 70,000 rand. That grant creates two or three jobs. So you're looking at about 25,000 rand per job created. Our target is to have 75% of businesses succeed beyond 2 years of inception. So that's the criteria we try and measure ourselves on, you know, because generally, if you can take a business past its first 2 years, generally that business can succeed for the next 8 to 10 years, you know. So you create sustainable income. Where we place young people in job opportunities, so there, to an extent, we're willing to subsidize companies to give young people job opportunities, assist with them if they need assistance with travel or accommodation.
How does that differ to, and I think the campaign is called the Yes Campaign, with Tashmia Ismail heading it, right? A few days ago it was launched, and obviously endorsed by the president. How does that differ?
So
were they getting companies
so there's no differ. People? And I think, you know, there's no competition between NYDA and Yes.
But is there duplication?
I wouldn't say so. I think, you know, for a long time, we've said, and this is an outcome of the CEO's initiative, and it comes out of NEDLAC as well. So for a long time, we said that the key to job creation is cohesive working relationship between government, labor, and business, right? And we know that the National Development Plan says that we expect business to create jobs. We expect small and medium enterprises to create jobs, you know. And I think to an extent, you'll see countries that have succeeded, there's a large degree of trust between government and business, you know. So this is business coming
on
board.
Such as, example?
Take China, for example, right? So in China, if you're willing to be a volunteer, so similar problem to here, right? The good skilled teachers are unwilling to travel to rural areas to teach because what's the benefit? My family's here. My, you know, I can earn a better salary in Gauteng. But it means the learners in Gauteng get a better education than those in rural areas. So take China, for example. If you're a good skilled teacher and you're willing to go and teach in a rural province, right, when the time comes for you to apply for a loan, right, the bank will give you a loan at interest minus a huge
amount. So there's massive incentives.
So there's incentive, right? So we need to create those incentives for people to contribute. And that's what we need in this country, right? Because we know we're not just going to overnight, you know, expand the economy, but we need strong social activism of people to contribute to growth of the economy.
Well, that's very important. Yeah, my guest is Wasim Karim, the CEO of the NYDA. There's a couple more tweets. Well, someone called Moscow Mayepa. Love the name, saying, well, you are, he's referring to you, not to me, okay, but you are so educated. People like you are inspiring us, the youth, to make education cool. Your view on graduate unemployment. Okay, graduate unemployment compared to unskilled.
So I think, you know, we also need to acknowledge that we all have dreams and we all have hopes, right? But we need to create a value chain to churn out skills that the economy needs. You know, so I think to an extent there is a mismatch of skills that young people achieve at university level and the ones that are needed by the economy, right? But adding on to that is that we really advocate that requiring experience for entry-level jobs is inauspicious. It's not helping the situation, right? So if you want to be a driver and you need 5 years of experience, so if you want to be a receptionist and you need 4 years of experience, how are you supposed to get that experience, you know? So we're really advocating, which is one of our roles and responsibilities, that for entry-level positions at least, you know, let's take on the requirement for experience, you know? Let young people learn on the job, you know?
But you see, to what extent can you intervene?
Yeah.
In terms of the job offering, as you mentioned, with no experience, but B, in terms of the learning process where, you know, are you in a position where you can go to universities and colleges and schools to say, you're wasting your time even teaching these type of things?
Yeah, so I think we do have that position. But I think we needed to gain that credibility of the institution as well, you know. I think in its initial years, the NYDA lacked that little bit of credibility, which impacted on it being that advocate for young people, you know. But I think we're now in a position to produce high-quality research and high-quality policy and thought leadership documents that can influence how planning is done in this country, you know. For example, we are tasked by the NYDA Act to produce the Integrated Youth Development Strategy, you know, which allows us to then monitor what happens at a basic education level, monitors what happens at a higher education level, and to say to higher education, these skills are not contributing to the economy, you know.
So
why are we forcing young people to
If we spoke to you, say, in 5 years from now, thinking about a presidential term and we measured your personal success, you'd be successful as the CEO of the NYDA if you did what?
Yeah, so look, I think, you know, we'd really like to see youth unemployment reduce to under 20%. You know, that's really our target. At 60%, it's really, we're sitting on a ticking crisis.
Absolutely.
So really dropping that figure. And then secondly, improving the retention rate at basic education level is really one that's critical for us, you know. Improving social structures, improving early
childhood. Will we see plans coming through it? And maybe as you said at the outset, maybe NYDA branding itself and marketing itself a lot more in terms of its successes to take ownership of, hey, that's what we've done. The way the cricket team has just done to say we won a series against Australia.
Yeah, of course. You know, of course, that's something we want to do. Above all else, I mean, if you look at our budget, it's relatively small, you know. So we also have to act as a beacon of hope and inspiration. Mm-hmm. So where we tell those success stories, we want them to inspire other young people. And I mean, we saw with Fees Must Fall that if you can put forward something, you know, that's tangible and that inspires young people, you know, they'll advocate on your behalf. So if NYT is something that's relevant to young people, it's something that young people need, they'll be our advocates, you know. They'll necessitate on government to increase our funding so that we create more youth entrepreneurs, them more in job opportunities.
There's a couple of more comments from people. Just Mario saying 15 branches functional, that is shocking. Remember 2014, there was 131 from 217. We can debate that. Tsapiso Makwena saying, you're actually spot on. It was a duplication of the YES program. How do you measure progress? Okay, that sort of question we've answered. Sig saying, the truth is that the NYDA has made no constructive contribution to the youth development since its inception. It is an obvious ANC parasite milking state coffers to enrich cricket. Comrade, certainly very, very forthright about his particular comments there. What will, in fact, I want to get to more about some of your career highlights besides being the CEO of the NYDA in the 10 minutes or so we have remaining, putting Wasim Karim in the
spotlight. In the spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines, only on SAFM.
Well, 10 more minutes with Wasim Karim, the CEO of the NYDA. There's a couple more comments. There's always basically space for you to call in. Family hasn't done that, but there's still a chance as we wrap up. 0891104207 into Toko Makatini saying, I like Wasim Karim's commitment to improve the well-being of South Africans. It's especially encouraging that he practices what he preaches. So very, very nice message there. Well, what's been your career highlight? I mean, if you look at like three dark points.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I started off my career, so even though I did my articles at KPMG, they generally offer you to lecture at the university for 1 year of your articles.
Okay.
You know? So I started out there, and I remember my first
University
day,
of Pretoria?
Pretoria, yeah, which is my alma mater. Mm. So I remember, you know, I was quite a shy person. So first day, I'm standing in front of 400 people staring back at me, you know.
They thought you were a student, right?
Yeah. And you go to lecture now, and not just lecture, you have to inspire these people, you know. to, because they're looking at you for it, you know. So, and it was one of those, like, you know, groundbreaking moments in your life, you know, where you can either, you know, jump and swim or totally collapse, you know. And I took a lot of positives out. I was a terrible public speaker before, you know.
Okay.
And that really helped me grow so much, you know. But it also, where I developed this love for working for young people, with young people, you know. So that was very exciting for me, you know, and to be given that opportunity. I think, you know, you speak about that one quantum moment in your life. I think that was that for me.
Because, I mean, I have, you know, two son and daughter both at varsity, and they would come back like every second. It's like, this lecture was just boring. I don't need to
go to it. Yeah, yeah, I agree.
How do we change that?
I think, you know, I think we need to encourage public speaking from a young age, you know. We must force our kids to do drama and, you know, to put themselves out there.
That impacts on the lecturing part.
I think so, you know. But also, it's also a case of having confidence in yourself, you know. I remember one of my mentors telling me is that, you know, fake it till you make it. You know, the more confident you look, the more people will tend to believe what you say, you know. So I think that's very important.
Yeah. I made a note. I think that's some very important advice.
No, and I mean, I think also we need to look at our recruitment. And this is what the NYDA says. It says, hire young people and you'll bring greater energy into your organizations.
Well, I've said before, I want to be mentored by a young person. Nobody's taken up that offer.
Yeah.
Drop me an email, ashraf@safm.co.za. There's a couple of guys here saying, hands up, and we'll see about it. Their minds are on soccer too much. An under-receiving Man United, so maybe not a good example. Simpiwe, we just lost you. I was going to connect with you in a minute. Call back right away, Simpiwe. I'll get to you.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was amongst your career highlights. What do you do outside of work?
Yeah, so I enjoy sports quite a bit. So I used to play. I was quite a good goalkeeper at school and afterwards. Now I just find I'm very slow and I'm getting hit in the ball getting hit in the face a lot these days. So I've decided to take a break. I play golf. I try and play golf.
A rather pedestrian sport.
Yes, you know.
So you're going to watch the US Masters coming up?
Indeed, you know, indeed. We're hoping for a Tiger Woods victory there.
How important, I mean, just seriously, without getting into golf, Tiger Woods, we know, well-documented, largely absent the last 3-4 years. It's taken the fun out of golf, isn't it?
It has. You know, you just look at his comeback in the last 3 weeks and the following that he has at the age of 42. It's just inspiration.
He's going to win another major. Let's see what happens. Yeah. And what about personal leadership? Do you have a mantra, a personal mission statement that you stick on the wall?
Yeah. So there's the saying that says, the pain of regret is far worse than the pain of discipline. So it's to say, you know, you just have to keep that 5 a.m. alarm, you know, when the last thing you want to do is get out of bed in the morning.
Regret is far more painful than the pain of discipline.
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah. Tweet it, you guys, and just thumbs up, because I think it's a quote with tweeting, absolutely.
Yeah.
Personal bucket list that you still want to achieve outside of work? I'm talking like family stuff. What?
Oh, yeah. So me and my wife are expecting our first child this
Okay,
year.
Wonderful. Yeah, right, good.
Yeah. So, you know, some nights I wake up with anxiety, you know, and I wonder if I'll be a good father.
How soon is that going to happen?
September. Right. So it's
spring baby.
Time for
right.
us.
And,
so, you know, it's I have a little bit of anxiety around it, you know, but I think it's an exciting time in your life, you know, and to see, you know, I think the first time you go to the doctor and you see the little hands and the little feet, you know, it's really a life-changing moment.
Well, absolutely. You know? Maybe that's the point that you're the head of the NYDA, so you think of your son or your daughter as just that, the manifestation of your dual roles in life, absolutely. Yeah. And professionally?
Look, like I told you at the start, you know, I don't try to set very long-term goals for myself, you know. What I really try and do is say, how do you become a better person every day, you know?
How do you do that? How do you become a better person every day?
So I think it's being willing to listen to criticism, both of yourself and your organization from time to time, you know. Accepting that hard truths really do cut both ways, you know, and accepting criticism from time to time. And instead of internalizing that, you know, building yourself on that criticism.
What's your greatest skill?
Yes, I don't know if I'm that skilled, to be honest with you, but I think it's my ability to engage with people, I would say. You know, I've been able to work with people from a diversity of cultures, you know? And when you embrace the diversity of people, I can see that you tend to get the best out of them.
Okay, well, there you are. We got about 3 more minutes to go, incredibly, and then time will finish up having Wasim Karim in the spotlight, right? Let's get to some quick questions with quick answers. So, suggest a couple of books that you recommend that we must read.
Yeah, so I would, J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings is the greatest book ever written.
You like it? Why?
So I do like it. No, it's just, you know, well, I'm a very nerdish person. By nature. So, you know, the fantasy books are ones that always appeal to you, but just the quality of the writing, the storyline. It's everything.
Is there another book?
So I don't know if you've read Jim Brown's Good to Great, whereby they indicate that good is the enemy of great, you know. I think if you're a young entrepreneur, if you're in the professional space, if you're a leader, read that book, you know. It breaks down the components of leadership. And the one statement that really appealed to me is that you don't need to always be a rock star CEO to succeed. You just need to do the right things over and over, and they manifest themselves.
And reflect on that.
Succeed.
Good is the enemy of great. I think very important one. So, if you were to meet the president, Ramaphosa, now of course, what advice would you give him?
Yeah. So, look, I think you know South Africa is an inspirational country. You know, I think we've had a lot of hope return to us, and a lot of. That, but we need tangible programs to deliver on that.
You know, sort it out.
But I would say the main thing is it's not government's job, it's not labor's job, it's all of our jobs together, including the citizens of this country.
Okay, so quick question: what's the one thing we need to move this country from good to great, from mid table to what I called a champion nation, champion South Africa? What's the one?
Yeah, thing? So I think every single citizen in this country needs to say what John F. Kennedy once said, is that it's not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, and what you can do for your
hopefully fellow
Hopefully
you're doing that already, right. Who would you like to take out to lunch?
So I'd hardly get to take my wife out to lunch, you know, with a busy career. So I always love to take her out to lunch. Lance Armstrong, you know, that guy got me through university, you know. I read all his books and he was a real inspiration.
What would you ask him now?
Yeah, so I just want to ask him how he dealt with the fallout, you know, from everything that happened. You know, to an extent, I understand why people cheat and I understand the rationalization behind it, you know. But how did you take your life forward after that?
Yeah,
that's
what
I'm really
interested in. Lastly, how would you like to be remembered?
Yeah, so... You know, I'm not all about legacy or, you know, anything like that. I'd like to be remembered as a humble person, you know, in spite of what you achieve or whatever. I believe we're all just components of something bigger in this world.
I'd like to think you're going to say, here's the man who took the country from good to great. Certainly the youth, Wasim Karim, CEO of the NYDA. Great chatting to you. Thanks for allowing me to put you in the spotlight.
Cool. Thank you so much.
There we are. Well, his time is up and so is mine for today. But that's a piece of takes over now. It's 4 o'clock. It's PM Live.